Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to be in with you on a Wednesday at Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Will Bauer is in, and we are loaded up today. A little MacGyver action, but we're going to make it work. And excited to talk with Mitch Sherman of The Athletic. Mitch is scouting Chicago. So we'll talk with Mitch coming up here at 425. Mike Shuhart, Shuey, going to be in from Wilderness Ridge. We'll be out at Wilderness August 23rd doing a live show. Myself and Jay Moore excited about that. So Shuey is in the house. And then the 5 o'clock hour, don't want to miss, we'll run down Brad Edwards, his take on the Big Ten West and the FPI game-by-game analysis, where Nebraska's at. What's Nebraska going to, you know, what's best-case scenario for the Big Red? And then Gary Barnett, that hype machine that is Nebraska-Colorado week two, is engulfing Coach Barnett and where they're at out in Boulder. We'll see if we can run Coach down as he gets off the golf course. I'd tell you the phone numbers. Won't matter today. You want to interact with us, please do so via Twitter, at Schmidt underscore radio for me, Chris Schmidt, at Willie underscore Bauer.
Correct.
For Will Bauer, and at Hail Varsity, always a winner to tweet at Hail Varsity, and can email Chris at Hail Varsity. com. So that's the lineup today. Lot to get to. I don't spend hardly any time at all on softball, but just a little background for me. When I first got into broadcasting, I was lucky enough to work for Bill Dolman. And one of the things Bill had me do that I got to do early in my career was do play-by-play for the Nebraska women's softball team. This is back 2002-ish. Anywho, it was the year that Nebraska softball was phenomenal. I mean, they were incredible. Peaches James was a freshman. Buckholz was at short. Amber Burgess was your catcher. So really good players. And Nebraska that year won the Big 12 tournament down in Oklahoma City. I got to cover that team and ride with the team. A chance to go to Iowa City as they won the regionals and then back down to Oklahoma City for the Women's College World Series. Enjoyed my experience. Got a chance to spend time with the Nebraska softball team back in the early 2000s. Got a chance to meet and interview Jenny Finch, and that was really cool. And long and short of it is I'm touching on the fact that longtime softball coach Rhonda Revell's on administrative leave. And the statement from the Nebraska Athletic Department says, we take seriously any concerns raised regarding our student athletes. That per the statement, as part of the due diligence, Coach Revell's been placed on administrative leave pending the completion of a review. With it being a personnel matter, there's no additional comment until the review is complete. So, listen, and a couple of sources told the Journal Star that several practices this spring approached 4 hours in length. That's unclear, though, if it led to this chain of events. So long and short of it, athletes have a lot more say and voice and power, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. Okay, athletes need to be able to speak up. Athletes need to be able to communicate. Athletes need to be able to be heard and talk, okay, if they disagree with something. While you may disagree with something, you're not the coach. You're not the decision maker. I disagreed with my parents a lot. And after losing money at poker with some buddies and not doing well on a test the next day, they grounded my ass for a few weeks. I deserved it, period. I'm not the one that's paying the rent. I'm not the one that's, you know, footing the bill. And you learn the hard way. You don't drive anywhere for a month because you're acting like a jerk. You learn to shape up real quick. At least that's what my personal experience was. This is not anything to do with softball, but I'm just talking about there is always somebody in charge that sets the tone, makes the rules, you follow them. And when it comes to 4 hours of practice, if Nebraska softball crossed that line, you know what? And this isn't to be rude or negative. The way they played last spring, they probably needed some more practice. And guess what? The Coach Revelle, I know, is going to do the best she can to get her kids ready and win. And if that means more time for ground balls, if that means more fly balls to the outfield, that means more batting practice, if that means that type of fundamental work, so be it. I know that there are rules in place, so you can't overexert athletes. I get that. They're students first. Yes, I get all of that. But I hope things shake out for her, is my point, because she is a tremendous coach, 27 years, nearing the 1,000 win mark. And I know Nebraska softball is trying to kind of get back on the winning track, but she's a legendary coach, and I have, in my 3 weeks around her many years ago, I saw intensity, I saw insight, I saw coaching, I saw teaching, and I saw a person that loves her kids, period. And if this is a Connie Yori situation where you have a couple of kids that feel entitled, I don't know this, I'm just talking out loud, and say, hey, I'm going to go over my coach's head and go to administration. We're not being treated right. That's brutal. That's ass backwards with where things need to happen in a pattern of communication. You got a problem if you're a freshman or a senior, talk to the captain. If you are the captain, then bring it to the assistant or the head coach and have an adult conversation. Just too many times administrations, and you have worst case examples of some really awful stuff that's happened at Michigan State, that's happened at Penn State. You have those instances where, right, administration didn't do enough hands-on work to supervise. I don't know, because it's a personnel matter, the depth of what it is, if it is a couple of these sources to the Journal Star talking about too long of practices, 4 hour practices, then okay, you went over the line on practice time, don't do it again. you don't get rid of a coach, but it's never good when you're on administrative leave. There's my piece on softball and Rhonda Revelle. And just today's athlete. Today's athlete comes in with not everyone. But today's athlete comes in with a lot of hype before you've done anything on the field. And today's athlete comes in thinking they're ready, and some are. Some need to work at it to get ready. Today's athlete comes in where they feel like they've already achieved something. And it is an achievement to get to go to school for free. It is an achievement to chase your dreams with a game you hopefully love. And then eventually get that education, get that degree, get it paid for, and then make the jump to professional opportunities if you're good enough. That's big. But there, somewhere along the way, somebody's had a chance to have their opinion taken as gospel versus a coach's decision. It needs to be followed. And you can question it, but you still got to follow it. And you just have a more entitled athlete. That's partly our fault, too. We're talking to 16- and 17-year-olds. Guilty. We interview them. But I hope things work out for Rhonda Revelle. Good series going on with HailVarsity.com and Dr. Petey, Derek Peterson, the most intriguing Huskers of 2019. We'll get to that. Some thoughts on Cam Jurgens, because he is number 4 at the list of most intriguing Huskers on HailVarsity.com. I want to go back to the hot reads, and Brandon Vogel's tremendous at what he does with HailVarsity.com. And he had an interesting question this morning, and I love these type of discussions. It's would you take it or would you kind of roll the dice? And read his story, HailVarsity.com, hot reads Brandon Vogel. He asked you about the 2016 Wisconsin Badgers. What did the Wisconsin Badgers do? Well, the Wisconsin Badgers went 10-3 and lost in a just phenomenal Big Ten title game to Penn State. Wisconsin was rolling. That was the magic year of Penn State in 2016. It all started with a blocked punt against Ohio State. They rode that momentum to an 11-2 Rose Bowl berth as Big Ten champions. Wisconsin got outlasted by Penn State in the Big Ten title game in a classic shootout back and forth, 35-31 type ball game. Might have been higher scoring than that. But Penn State ended up going to the Rose Bowl. Wisconsin ended up falling to the Cotton Bowl, where they took on P.J. Fleck in Western Michigan. The end of the story is that Wisconsin ended up 10-3, ranked in the top 10. And then they followed that up with a 13-1. Last year was last year, where they were 8-5, I think, with a loaded offensive line and a Heisman back running the football. But you didn't get good Hornibrook. You got flighty Hornibrook as a junior. He was better as a sophomore. So would you take 10-3 New Year's Day 6 right now if you're a Nebraska football fan? And I think most of you would jump on that. I think absolutely you'd take it. You know, what's the best probable outcome? And I don't know where you're at before we get into to the start of fall camp. We'll have media days and coverage in Chicago next week. But if I look at Nebraska right now, and I'm just being real honest, my biggest like concern for this team is, well, there's a few. And it's out of everybody's hands, first and foremost, the injury situation. Can you get 12 plus out of Adrian? I'm not knocking or doubting his toughness or desire at all. I am not. Your quarterbacks get the hell beat out of them in the Big Ten. And are you going to have more running with Adrian this year? Almost ran for 700 yards and he missed a couple of games, right? Last year. You don't know what you have at running back. He's quite capable of it, and it's beyond just extending plays. You go five wide, you run the draw with him. There's 15 for him. So can he stay healthy? Juergens at center, is that going to be a thing, and is it going to be a dominant thing? Offensive line, defensive line looks good, looks deep, looks talented. Linebackers, they look good, but they're thin. Corners, secondary safety, very excited. Very excited for the new kids coming in, very excited for who return with that back four. I think it can work out. I think Nebraska can be all right. I think they can beat Ohio State. I think they can win that game to like give them a launching pad for 2019. What I'm concerned with, and I go back to 2020, I go back to 1992. Maybe some of you remember the season, maybe some of you don't. But 92 was Frazier's freshman year. He came in halfway through. Nebraska was good. They got hot. They had leaders like Perella on the defensive line. Nebraska was killing everybody. They rocked Colorado. They rocked the good Kansas team. They beat Kansas State in Tokyo, I think, and it was an up-and-coming Kansas State program. They dismantled Colorado on Halloween night, probably the most entertaining, bloodthirsty atmosphere I've seen and heard about at Memorial Stadium. You factor in Halloween, you factor in flasks, and it was big time, where you just kill Detmer and Stewart, and the Blackshirts had a field day. You win at Oklahoma. You lost to Washington early. You got beat by Florida State by 13 in the Orange Bowl, but you were closer. How do you get to 9-3 that year? You lose at Iowa State. You lost to a 4-7 Iowa State team. You lost to a team, and the only team Osborne lost to that finished below 500. I think that's – we talked to Jimmy Walden from time to time, the coach at Iowa State. He's like, yeah, I took a picture of the scoreboard to make sure it stayed real. With that upset, does this team that's got talent, but we don't know if it's ready to go consistently talent, skill position guys, offensive line, we don't know if Nebraska is going to be able to handle their business every week. And that's as mature as this football team is, You talk and hear about it a lot. You hear about handling success. Nebraska can beat Ohio State. Can they handle their business the week before against the Illini? They're supposed to. They're a better football team. They're a better program. Do you look ahead or do you get stuck? Do you go handle your business full of emotion out in Boulder? Think you totally can. Are you able to win some of those close games and make plays in big moments? You'll need to. You're going to have a lot of close games this year. Brad Edwards will get into that with him here in a little less than an hour when it comes to FPI. But that's my question. Health, the schedule sets up. How are you in close games for Nebraska? Do you handle success if you hit it early? And then do you avoid the look ahead, the misstep? Do you get complacent? Do you think you've already arrived? That whole fight that happens with every team every year, and it bit one of the better Nebraska teams in 92 with a bunch of veterans. You have some upperclassmen. You have a Darian Daniels that's new to the program but feels like an old soul. You have Adrian Martinez. You have Ben Stille. You have Lamar Jackson. You have Boodle. You have dudes that are going to keep everyone kind of front and center. But do you get caught up in the hype? But there's a lot of it being handed out for Nebraska. Loaded show. Coming up, we'll run down Mitch Sherman next. Gary Barnett on the way. And Brad Edwards. Hail Varsity continues.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back in, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Let's get caught up with Mitch Sherman from The Athletic. At Mitch Sherman is where you follow him on Twitter. He's already scouting Chicago. Mitch, where you at? Give us a location.
I am on Cart Street, right along the third baseline of Wrigley Field. I am scouting out locations for Big Ten Media Days next week. I'm actually getting ready for a little summit of athletic college football to kick off our Media Days season, which begins next week.
Are you going to go order an old style at the Cubby Bear? Can you walk across the street?
Chris, I mean, I don't know if you know my feelings about the Cubs. But,
no, I know. But I know you might be thirsty is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, no, I'm thirsty. And I'll find somewhere. You know, I don't know that I will necessarily hit the Cubby Bear, but somewhere around here for sure we're going to be looking for some food and some stuff to drink before we all get down to business tomorrow.
I like it. Well, we caught you last week. You were on your way back from South Dakota as you made a trip to see the polar bear. Loved your story, Mitch, with The Athletic. And what was your experience like? You've in your career, you've done a lot of traveling to talk to a lot of prospects before they got to college. You've also made the trip once they're in college. I mean, you've done a lot of features that are fantastic. What'd you think of Nash and his family? What was your experience like?
Well, I spent time with Nash and his dad, Joe, and his wrestling coach and his football coach at the high school. And, you know, it wasn't as in-depth. Some others didn't, you know, visit him at home. So I'm somewhat limited in my observations about him. But I can tell you that he's, you know, I mean, he's what you've heard. I mean, he's as advertised. He's a huge individual. And his dad is even bigger than him. You know, they've built their schedules for the last 5 or 6 years around turning Nash into this polar bear that he is. He's 6'5", 305 pounds, and you know, he's a machine as a wrestler. I think he's just coming of age as a football player. The analogy that I've used for people in Nebraska, not that it's hard to understand the level of play in South Dakota, but if you're in Nebraska and you know the classifications of football, he's playing like the equivalent of C2 football.
Sure.
As a guy who looks like, you know, is built like Ndamukong Suh. So, I mean, there's only so much that he can do. I mean, he almost has to be more concerned about not hurting the guys on the other side of the line than he is getting to the quarterback. I don't think they're necessarily, you know, putting his opposing teams that play against Chamberlain High School are not putting themselves in positions for Nash to get to their you know, to their running backs and their quarterbacks. They run away from it, is what I'm saying. From a football perspective, it's going to be extremely important for him to get to a place in Lincoln where he can work on his game and develop his game and grow as a defensive lineman, because he just doesn't have those kind of opportunities, or the ceiling is very much capped in the fourth largest level of 11-man football, or I guess you could say the smallest of four levels of 11-man football in the state of South Dakota. But as a wrestler, you see it. I mean, the guy's the number one ranked heavyweight in the country, headed up to Fargo here this week to train for the freestyle and Greco-Roman national championships. He wants to bring both of those titles home here in July to go with this folk style championship that he won this spring in Cedar Falls, Iowa. You know, I think that is on par with the kind of potential that this guy has as a football player. And, you know, it's saying a lot, but the ceiling is unlimited when you're that big and you're that strong, and you have the kind of work ethic that he's got. You can see it in wrestling and what he's done, and I think he's just scratching the surface as a football player.
Mitch Sherman's with us, Hail Varsity Radio, touching on his trip to South Dakota to see Nash Utmacher, the polar bear, big-time get for Nebraska within the 500-mile radius. And, Mitch, was there any trepidation by Nash about going with football over wrestling? Because, I mean, he's been incredible at wrestling, and he loves it, but, you know, football is what he's committed to, and I know that Tanner Farmer did both for a while, and was that something that was talked about or explored for Nash at Nebraska?
Well, he was recruited by Mark Manning in Nebraska, along with almost every team at the Big Ten. I think it has more to do with his size, with where he's going to play, what his weight is going to be when he gets into the Nebraska strength program, the football strength program. You know, you don't want to compromise what he can give you as a defensive lineman. You know, I think 305, 310, where he's at right now, where he plays football, is a little ways under what he'll be when, you know, someday when he's a nose tackle for Tony Tuioti. And you may see him at 320, 325. And that would be difficult for him to wrestle because, you know, he'd have to get down to 285 as a wrestler. Right. And the wrestling season, the football season overlap a lot more in college than they do in high school. Plus, you know, that's a factor right there that would dissuade him from trying to do both sports at the college level. And then I think he realizes that to be the best football player that he can be, you know, he needs to be committed to that 12 months out of the year. Not in South Dakota, not as a high school player in Chamberlain, South Dakota, but in Lincoln, absolutely. You know, he's not going to walk in and dominate guys at the Big Ten level in any way, shape, or form compared to the way that he does it in high school. So, you know, I think there will be a period of adjustment for him, even with his size and strength, because he just hasn't seen players in football at that level. He's seen guys in wrestling, you know, and I think that's an indication of how he'll step up, how he'll adjust to the dramatic rise in competition level. You can see what he's done when he's gone from the South Dakota prep mats at wrestling, where, again, he's not facing guys who are necessarily anywhere close to his level, to go to the national tournament and to be able to do well there. He's made that. He's crossed that bridge as a wrestler. So there's reason to believe that he'll be able to do it in football, too. And there's reason to believe he'll be able to do it when you go out and see him deadlift 600 pounds. I mean, the guy obviously has the physical tools to be a very good defensive lineman in Nebraska. But to do them both, you know, for him, it came down to picking one sport, is what he told me, and others, too. And he has a passion for football that's grown over his years in high school to surpass his love for wrestling. And as a result, he's chosen to go that route at the next level.
Mitch Sherman's with us, the Athletic, Hail Varsity Radio, at Mitch Sherman, talking about his time with the polar bear up in South Dakota. Mitch, when it came to sealing the deal for Nebraska, we have talked the last month about the importance of the 500-mile radius, and Nebraska is almost perfect in surrounding areas. What with Nebraska's fishing trip with Nash, take us through, if you can, a little bit about that conversation, how Nebraska's ability to connect and relationship build was unique and how it won out over some other big-time programs.
I think it was very genuine, the kind of relationships that were built with him, with Nash, between his family and the coaching staff. They connected with Chuck Ross. They connected with Eric Shenander. You know, clearly those guys are cut from a similar cloth as Midwestern people who grew up as Midwestern kids, Midwestern football players. That was a big part of it. The fishing trip was nice. But he could fish in Madison, Wisconsin. They've got lakes all around that town. He went out to a farm pond in outside of Lincoln with Frost and Shenander and Tony Tuioti, Ryan Held, some others who joined that group. It was a big group, a bigger group than what was expected for their hosts. But that was great. And you imagine all those people getting into a boat or a couple of boats, and they're lucky those things didn't end up at the bottom of the lake. I don't know exactly how that all went down, but that's a lot of weight to put onto the lake. But that's who he is, and that's what he does. And he lives right along the Missouri River, goes out and fishes there, likes to hunt. And he was doing that stuff before he could walk. Joe would put him in his car seat to go fishing and hunting. It's just a story of a kid who, I believe that he is the way that he's portrayed. There's not something there that's glitz and glamour. I mean, you get what you see with that family, and that's I think really worked well with the way that Frost and Shenander and Tuioti and Ryan Hell approached this recruiting. He said that when he went to Lincoln, he could see himself, it reminded him of home more than Madison did, more than Eugene, Oregon did. The connection that he had with some of the Nebraska players that he met, he mentioned Jarrett Nelson in particular, another small town kid from Nebraska. It all resonated with Nash to the point where he moved up his position. He had planned originally to go through these national tournaments, get this summer stuff done, and then come back before school started in August or late July and make the decision. And obviously did it right at the beginning of July because he knew and he was ready, and he knew that Nebraska was the place for him.
Mitch Sherman with us, Hail Varsity Radio, at Mitch Sherman on Twitter, The Athletic. Mitch bumping around Chicago right now. Great story on the polar bear as he went to visit him up in Chicago. Last thought, when it comes to Nash and the attention, he's a guy who doesn't necessarily want the attention. Is that fair to say, even if a Nebraska fan bumps into him at a gas station? I saw that part in your story.
Yeah, that was a little suspect. I don't know what was going on there, but he did run into a Nebraska fan at a gas station, and I cringed and asked Nash if he had considered the possibility that fan drove up to Chamberlain just to see him and hopes to run into him. It is a small town, and Nash, kind of laughed. And he's fine with the attention. He knows that it's going to come when he gets to Lincoln. I mean, mm-hmm. There's gas stations that every gas station or restaurant or whatever it is that he goes into when he's in Lincoln, there's going to be somebody who recognizes him. Even as a true freshman next year or before his true freshman season when he's in Lincoln in the summer, I think he'll be one of the more recognizable members of that class. And he's a charismatic kid. He'll talk to you. I don't think he's going to bask in the attention, but he will definitely talk to you and tell you what he thinks and be a friendly guy. But that's not why he's doing it. He's not. He didn't pick football over wrestling because of the limelight or the exposure, the glamour that comes with this sport. I think he did it, as I said, just because he loves the sport, and he'll be fine. I mean, I think there are plenty of other guys who will have a more difficult time adjusting to the spotlight that comes with Nebraska football than Nash. He'll handle it. His personality is such that I think he'll adapt pretty well and pretty quick.
Mitch, thanks for making time today. Enjoy Chicago. We'll get caught up soon. Take care.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Take care.
Gotta love Mitch Sherman live in Chicago. Mike Shuart in studio next. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. We welcome in with Wilderness Ridge Mike Shuart. Shuey is back in. Shuey, how are you, brother?
I'm good. Good to be back in studio.
Baseball is done for me. Yeah. Just talking during the break, I'm going to kidnap Iowa Russ, and we're going to go swing the clubs with you Well, you could probably tolerate Iowa Russ, but maybe not so much me. About 15 minutes is enough for me a week. But no, man, I got weekends that are a little wide open now.
Yeah, a little more time for golf. That's a good thing.
A little bit. How have you been?
I've been great. Busy.
Yes.
Busy time of the year. That's
lessons.
A good thing, though. Lessons and fitting and divot dogs.
You're winning.
Oh yeah, we're rolling.
You're rolling. What's the next?
We got
conquest.
One tournament left.
Okay.
Then after that tournament, then we'll figure out our seedings, and then we'll go into the South playoffs, and then that's when it all starts. That's when it gets real. See if we can get through the playoffs. So the playoffs, you got to win your first match. You got to be the four highest point totals. Then they go and play another nine.
Okay.
And then two of those go on to the finals. And then they take the top two in the north, the top two in the south, and then they play the finals for the belt. So
that'll be good.
Yeah, we're pretty good. I got all four of my teams right now. We stand in first. Lincoln Country Club is second, and then we're third, fourth, and fifth.
Level of heated competition, all friendly, of course, in a gentleman's game between you and Country Club.
It's
intense, right?
It's ramping up pretty good.
That's good.
Yeah.
Like Nebraska, Oklahoma, I won't make.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I won't make who. I won't make you declare who's who.
And they're the defending champs, so they got the belt, and we want the belt, so. It's fun. It's really fun.
I love that. That's so good.
We've been playing against them the last couple of tournaments, so it's been some really, really fun matches. So,
that's good, man.
Yeah, it's really fun.
Talking about the Divot Dogs, that is the youth golf program with Wilderness Ridge. Shuey's got different teams, and if you got a son or daughter out there that you want to get involved with golf, no one better than Shuey to go teach them how to swing it. So how do they get locked in to at least get a tryout?
Most of the kids either they can do tryouts.
You start with youth program and then kind of
a lot of them go through. A lot of them go through our league program is what
sure.
it is. So a lot of them come through our camps.
Mm-hmm.
Then they go into their leagues and then the league, and a lot of them carry over into the Divot Dogs. So we have kids that we kind of identify
kind
through our camps and our leagues that we see, and we'll invite them to a tryout and see if it's something that works for them. So it's fun. I mean, they're around our program for a lot. And we have some kids that are from the outside of our program that we invite in,
you know,
if they request. So it's just so, I mean, we have the biggest team by far. We have 30 kids on our team, which is bigger than anybody else. So we have to limit it to that just because it's
sure.
gets too big then.
Sure. No, but that sounds fun, and best of luck to you.
Thanks.
And your squad, man. One
They're
of my favorite
awesome.
Youth golfers is Dylan Blank.
Yeah, man.
So
he's doing awesome.
He's a good baller. He's a good baller.
He is.
So let's switch gears. We'll talk some Nebraska football coming up. Gary Barnett's on the way. We're going to catch him on the golf course.
Imagine that,
right? So we'll talk to Barney coming up. I want to get your take here because you spent a lot of years as a coach at the university, and I don't want you to be uncomfortable with the topic, but just I want to touch on your experience with rules in the NCAA and administration in that process in reference to Rhonda Revell. And I kind of laid out to start the show, I've not been around Rhonda a lot. I just know that when I was early in my career, she was phenomenal.
Fantastic lady.
She's awesome. And I got to witness how she was tough and firm, but very caring for her kids. And she was awesome. And Nebraska was going to Big 12 tournaments and winning them. They were going to the Women's College World Series. Things haven't been, and I don't have that in front of me to detail each year in the Big 10 as you transition. I just know that they're trying to kind of get back to where
sure.
they were.
Sure.
There's a natural transition when you shift conferences. Look at football, right? Just as an example. So I kind of want your take on what's going on here as far as just today's athlete, today's coach, and how you navigate the relationship between coach and player and the era of a student voice that's never been this loud.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the biggest differences. I think the student athlete has a bigger voice that is being heard.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, you know, you look at the coach. The coach is a coach, man. What do they want to do? They have success. She's had success.
Want to win.
They want to win. And they know what it takes to win. They've been there. They have a desire. They understand what it takes and what needs to be done from the player standpoint to do it, and from their own standpoint that they have to put the players in that position, and they have to, whether it's coaching them, putting them in position through practice and how much they have to do it to be able to develop their skills that puts them in position to win.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like if you are a little weak or you're behind or whatever, you got to keep doing it until you are able to do it.
You gotta close the gap.
That's what it takes. That's what it is. So I think the student athlete sometimes has a little different, perspective on what that is. You know, it's like, do they have the same desire as the coach? Not many of them do.
Is that, in my opinion, is that just because of their youth and they're coming from? A lot of times they're coming from a club level or a high school situation where it's not as stringent. I mean, you have a larger and louder voice in the world of college athletics now as an athlete. You have a real loud voice on where you spend your time in high school to play and help a team win.
To me, some of it is you have more people in your ear or in their ear
mm-hmm.
than you ever had before. Did you have somebody, maybe it was your parents or maybe it was a coach that helped you get where you were to send you to your coach mm-hmm. that you're playing for? Now, everybody, they have trainers and different coaches and elite coaches and club coaches, and they're all in their ear about something. Well, basically, they're all in their ear about how good they are,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's like, you're good or you're good. So then if something's happening and a player is not performing or not playing or not getting what they think, then it's like you have a lot of people in their ear giving them reasons why. So it's like, and most of the time it's not that you stink, it's the opposite. It's somebody else's fault. That's my big thing. So it's like
it's accountability.
It is, and it's easy in my opinion. I just relate it to golf. It's really easy. It's like, it's pretty simple. You know what scores you have to shoot if you want to win the conference. It's there every year. This is what you shoot. And if you're not even close to that, whose fault is that? Is that my fault as your coach? I'm not developing you. Is it your fault? I don't.
How much time as a player are you putting in?
How much do you want it? I mean, it's right there in front of you. It's like I always say. I said golf is really, really simple. You know, it's because the low score will always win. I don't care how you do it. I don't care what it is. If you are the lowest score at the end of the day, you will always win no matter what. So it's like, how do you go shoot the lower score, you know? So
you get great.
Yeah.
You put the work in.
You put the work in to be able to do it. So, and sometimes they lose sight of that. It gets a little frustrating.
Should we hang on? We'll wrap up hour one. Brad Edwards coming up. The FPI. Gary Barnett coming up. Should we on the other side here with Hail Varsity.
And we're back.
Fellas, think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome.
Back to you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Mike Schuhart in studio. Will Bauer, I want to remind you to buckle up. That seatbelt or the windshield, what do you want to stop forward momentum? Seatbelts prevent excessive injury. When your vehicle and your body need to slow down in a hurry, that applies to the driver's seat, passenger seat, or back seat. Buckle up now, click it or ticket, a message from the Nebraska Department of Highway Safety. Brad Edwards, ESPN Insider, College Game Day, 10 minutes away on the Big Ten West FPI, that game-by-game breakdown. Gary Barnett, we'll talk to Barney about Nebraska-Colorado. Shuey, let's spend a couple more minutes here on the student-athlete in 2019, their voice, their options, their empowerment, also some of their entitlement. Not everybody. I'm not broad-brushing kids coming from high school into college that are bad kids. Not at all. They're really wonderful kids. They're caring. They're smart. They're intelligent. They are exquisitely talented in their sport. They put a lot of time from the ages of 8 to 18 to develop it. And there's been a lot of investment by mom and dad or guardian or whoever for different club programs. And I'm not talking out of both sides of my mouth, but there's a level here where coach to me is still coach at pick college level, pick high school level, that it's okay to disagree, but they're still the boss.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, there's a boss, and then there's an employee employer, and that's where you're going to get student-athletes ticked off, too. Yeah, I'm an employee. Why am I not getting paid? But the sacrifices you got to have, and you saw it firsthand, as one, and then also coaching student-athletes, you got to – it's still a game. It's fun when you win, but it is about sacrifice at this level.
It is, and today's student-athlete is even asked to sacrifice more, in my opinion. I mean, it's – I admire them immensely for what it is that they have to do, because it's a full time gig. I mean, it's year round, doing what it is that you do. You know, whether it's football, basketball, golf. I mean, you're practicing, you're working, you're playing. It's year round, and you're committed to it year round. So you better love it. That's first of all, and you're asked to do it even more, and then you're asked to compete at an incredibly high level. If you want to be successful at it. So it's like, it can get very frustrating as time goes on because you put all this time and energy into it. Now you got to put more time and energy. You got to be able to balance all the things that you have to do, you know. So it can get overwhelming. It can get very frustrating, and you can lose a little confidence in what it is that you do. Because, again, man, the higher level you go, the better everybody is. So, you know. So, but the bottom line is if you love what you do, if you love doing it, It's a labor of love, so it's not work. It's like, I'd always kind of shake my head because it's like, I'm really burned out and I don't want to, you know. It's like, how do you get burned out doing something that you love to do? It's like, if you love to do it, you wake up every morning looking forward to, when do I actually get to go do what I really, really like to do? So it's like, I can never understand where you would just not want to do it. So it's like, that's coming from me, though, because I love golf and I love to play golf. And it's like, every minute I had.
You know, you're a straight up grinder, bro. I mean, you.
So I'd skip school before I'd skip golf practice.
Well, absolutely.
My coaches didn't know that, though, right? That never happened. Not when I was in school, anyway.
That's right. Moving on when it comes to class and attendance.
Right.
Should we hang out if you want? Good to see you.
Thanks so much, brother.
Appreciate you much.
Thanks.
Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf. We'll be out there for a live show August 23rd. Put that on your calendar. Myself, Jay Moore, will kidnap Shuey. Brad Edwards, Gary Barnett coming up next hour.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back to you. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Welcome in with College Game Day, ESPN Insider at ESPN Radio. Brad Edwards at JBradEdwards on Twitter. Brad, did you throw a bit of a party? FBI got released, man.
It's actually been out for a while. And we released the overall rankings,
right,
and some of the larger scale season projections, like chance to make the playoffs and things like that. Over a month ago, but for whatever reason, it took it a while to filter onto the website. And we now have it up on ESPN.com, where people can kind of go on there and look at the game by game for every team and see, you know, what FPI says as far as their chance to win each game individually. It's that fun game we always play to, you know, pass the time in the spring and summer, go through the schedule and say, okay, that's a win, that's a loss, whatever. And FBI doesn't say that something is absolutely a win or absolutely a loss, but it starts to put percentages on it, and that's kind of fun to look at.
When folks look at this and they'll see Nebraska where they're ranked, and as I scroll down, Nebraska's in at 55. They are 8-4, basically, and a 6% chance to win the Big Ten. That's not awful in a second year, specifically if you're coming off a 4-8 season. But when we focus on the Huskers, what kind of piques your interest about Nebraska when you look at how FPI worked and the predictor of performance kind of lays out the games Nebraska should win? And then there are those coin flip games, specifically Wisconsin and Iowa. around 50-50 or a little below that. And then the losses look like at Minnesota and hosting Ohio State. Those are the losses per FPI. And some of the coin flips are those two West foes that have been just dogged on Nebraska and Iowa and Wisconsin.
The way I would look at it when you go through and start looking at these percentages, I think anything that's like between 35% and 65% to me is kind of a toss-up. That's pretty much like within a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize like a team that's like a 7-point favorite is a pretty clear-cut favorite. But it's also not anything that you would call a big upset if it ends up going the other way. And so Nebraska's got several games that fall into that category. You know, we've talked in previous conversations this offseason about just the Big Ten West in general and how much parity there is in that division. It might be the most closely contested division, in at least in the Power Five. I can't speak for all of college football. But you look down Nebraska's schedule, and there are only two games where FPI has Nebraska as an underdog. And, you know, that's, you said, Ohio State and then at Minnesota. And both of those, it gives them around a 40% chance to win, which is, I mean, that's not a significant number as far as underdog status. And that's giving them a pretty good chance to win. So what I look at is I see a schedule where every game is winnable, but there are a whole lot of games that are losable, too. I mean, you've got South Alabama and Northern Illinois where, and I know Northern Illinois, based on recent experience, is not one you want to say.
We don't say Northern Illinois around these parts.
But that's those are the two, according to FPI, that it's still not 100%. People have a hard time understanding that 90% is not 100%. They're not the same thing. But 100% means you will never lose. Hmm. 90% means you could lose that game one time out of 10. And so, but just looking at it, just the way that most of us would, South Alabama and Northern Illinois are two games that they should not lose. But every other game on that schedule, I don't think you could say that about one way or the other. Even Illinois, it gives them a 75% chance to win on the road there, mm-hmm. which means you should win, but it's not a monumental upset if you lose. And of course, you go down from there and you start to get higher percentages. I think one of the things that jumps out is FPI does not like Wisconsin as much as anyone who spent time around the Big Ten would.
Mm-hmm.
For various reasons, Wisconsin is not believed to be as strong this year. Part of that was they had a little bit of a down year last year. So I'm guessing they could be better than FPI is expecting, but that percentage might look a little bit high to people when you see, Nebraska basically 67% against Wisconsin. But yeah, like I said, a lot of games that just kind of strike you as toss-ups, which means that, I mean, I'm not going to say 12-0 is in the cards, although, it's no one game is unwinnable. I mean, every game on that schedule is very winnable to me. But, I would think anywhere from 11-1 to 6-6 seems feasible when you start to look at it on the game-by-game basis.
And that is the range, isn't it? I mean, high-end, Brad, what would the number be? And I want to credit Brandon Vogel, our writer with Hail Varsity. He loves him some FPI and has done some really good write-ups on it. And, what would be, if the number says 8-4 right now, a lot of us think that just because they may be a year away from double-digit wins with strength and conditioning and depth and surrounding Adrian with more playmakers at the skill spots. But what would be a pretty big-time overachievement number? Undefeated, yes, but I don't think anyone's going there. But would you say 10-3? And the example Vogel brought up, who I work with, was, look at Wisconsin's 2016 season where they finished 10-3, but top 10 in the polls. They played in the conference title game, didn't win it, but got to the Cotton Bowl. I mean, could Nebraska feasibly do something like that this year?
Yeah, I see that as a possibility. It's interesting when you start to look at games from this perspective. perspective, you realize that, I mean, what it's basically saying is that there are a whole lot of games that have a chance to be close.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us have watched enough college football to know that there are some years where you lose almost all the close games, and there are other years where you win almost all the close games. If you have one of those years where you play six games decided by a touchdown or less, and you go 5-1 in those games, that's how you end up at 11-1 with Nebraska's schedule. But it could just as easily go the other way. And so, look, I don't think 10-2 is ridiculous.
Hmm.
I just think that there's just so many unanswered questions, not just with them, but with so many of their opponents. And I mean, like Purdue, for example. I mean, like you're calling Nebraska, you know, a pretty decent favorite at Purdue. Jeff Brohm is still a really good coach, and I would think that Purdue at home is going to have a chance against pretty much anybody on a given day. Do you catch them on a good day or a bad day? Same thing with like Maryland, another one, 64% on the road for Nebraska. You know, on a given day, Maryland can cause a lot of trouble for most teams in the Big Ten. And so, will Minnesota be as good as FPI thinks that it will be? And Minnesota, for those who, you know, just kind of follow college football generally and don't pay close attention to the Big Ten, you have this preconceived notion of what Minnesota is, and you kind of laugh at the idea that they could win the Big Ten West. But I don't think there's a lot of difference between Minnesota and the other teams in the division right now, and they might be as much of a favorite as anybody. So those are all things. That's the fun of this. It's funny. I spend so much time talking about like Clemson and Alabama, mm-hmm. where you look at these schedules and like almost every game is a foregone conclusion before the season starts.
Yeah.
It's a lot more fun to talk about Nebraska because it could go so many different ways.
It could, and it's that way in the West. And let's stay with Minnesota. When you look at their FPI, I mean, you could talk yourself into, if you're a Gopher fan or not, based on their schedule and the FPI percentages, that they are a 10-2 football team. Now, again, you nailed it. How are you on a given Saturday, and what type of team are you catching? Are you catching a team that's re-energized after a bye week, ticked off to hand out a whooping because you dropped the game you shouldn't? And that's what I can't put my finger on with the West. What team out of the West is going to be able to handle their business, overcome injury, because it's going to happen in the Big Ten, and win the game you're supposed to win somehow, some way? And that's going to be a lot of your West opponents, right? You may be a better team,
yeah,
on paper than Northwestern. Guess what? Northwestern could have, should have, would have beat Michigan last year and went unbeaten in league play. They didn't. They still went 8-1, right, before the title game. So I'm interested to see which team can handle themselves if they get a bit of, and they get a taste of success and get that early momentum going. And that could happen with Nebraska against Ohio State. Clearly they got to handle their business early, but it's set up there to navigate, but it won't be easy.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the West right now, according to FPI, just the national rankings of the teams. I mean, Iowa is 23,
mm-hmm.
Minnesota is 28, Nebraska's 31, Wisconsin is 38. Who am I missing? Oh, no, Northwestern. See, Northwestern's 52. And what I would say to that is that a lot of people are big on Northwestern, not just because of what they did last year, but because of the new quarterback who transferred from Clemson. And even though he was the number one ranked quarterback coming out of high school, FPI does not look at him as a like five-star quarterback. They look at him as a guy who's never started a college football game, or that's the way he's processed. So so if he ends up being, you know, what he's kind of hyped up to be, then Northwestern should be a good bit better than the number 52 team in the country. And so there's a little bit of a disconnect because FPI is only going to give you credit at quarterback if it knows what the guy can do, or if it knows what the offense can do, you know, with that guy. So when you have a returning quarterback and you have, you know, some sort of track record for what the offense is with that guy at the helm, then that's something that is valuable to FPI. But when, and the same thing with Justin Fields at Ohio State, Justin Fields is not, he's not plugged in as a five star. It's plugged in as a
the new quarterback,
first year starter who's never, you know, who doesn't have any experience. And so those are two teams right there on Nebraska's schedule that you're like, well, what is that opponent going to be? Because you know, based on talent, they could be awesome at quarterback, but we won't know that until they actually have a chance to start a few games.
Couple more minutes. Brad Edwards with us, ESPN Radio, ESPN Insider, and College Game Day at J. Brad Edwards on Twitter. We're going over ESPN's FPI, the Big Ten West, and it is going to be a fun season. I can't wait for it to get here because of how many close games there could be. Each week's going to matter. It always does, but it'll be some drama, which will be a lot of fun, and Nebraska looks to be better, first of all, but year two with Frost and Adrian should be a lot of fun, and the defense coming along. Let's give me a couple of teams in the Big Ten that may not win it, Brad, but they could ruin it for some folks. And we've touched on Wisconsin and how FPI is not high on them. Penn State's getting a little bit of love, and some of us are scratching our head on that. Not that Franklin can't recruit, or not that there's not talent there, but you think they've lost a lot. How do they handle, you know, year two without Moorhead as the OC? They took a little bit of a step back with a 9-4 last year. Who are a few teams in the Big Ten that you think could maybe surprise, but maybe doesn't have enough gas in the tank to go further than an 8-4, 9-4 type year?
Yeah, Penn State is the one that jumps out at me as one that could have a big impact on the conference race, but a team that I don't really give much of a chance to win the conference itself. Just because I think they have enough talent in order to be able to you know, beat some of the best teams in the league on a given day. And I, you know, look at their schedule, and it's kind of light on the front end, but they're at Iowa, host Michigan, at Michigan State, at Minnesota, at Ohio State, and those are all teams that I think have a chance to win their respective divisions in the Big Ten, and a loss to Penn State could derail that. And so I think when you look at the entirety of the schedule, especially the road games, I mean, Michigan is the only one of those teams that Penn State gets at home. And when you look at their road schedule and conference play, I think it's really difficult. And so that's why I don't really consider them a contender. Mm-hmm. But I'm not willing to say that Penn State on a given day couldn't pull an upset in any of those games. And so I think they're a team to watch out for that could have a pretty significant say in who wins the conference. I just don't think it'll be them.
Out of the West, I know there's a cluster we've talked about, but if you were in July to circle one team that may be similar to a Penn State, who may derail but not win it?
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned Purdue earlier.
Okay,
I mean,
stand with Purdue.
That's a
gotcha.
Team to me that. Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at the Big Ten West, I think you could make a good case for five of the seven teams being real contenders.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that I just have a difficult time with is Purdue, because I think they're very well coached, and I think because of that you can't take them lightly, especially if you have to go to their place. And so I think they'll beat someone. You know, I don't think that they'll maybe they won't have the type of season they did last year. But I think at some point along the way, they're going to pull an upset, and it could end up ruining it for another team, especially in the West.
Brad Edwards with his ESPN College Game Day at J. Brad Edwards on Twitter. Brad, this was fun. We'll get caught up in a couple of weeks and get the season ready. Thanks for a few minutes today.
You got it, Chris. Take care.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Catching the coach just off the golf course, we say hi to Gary Barnett. Coach, how was the round today?
Well, it was really ugly. But that's sort of the way my game is right now. I scored okay, but it was ugly golf. But, yeah, I'll probably gonna win a dollar or two though. Sometimes it happens.
That, you know what? It scored a hit, right? And it scored a par. Doesn't matter how it looks. So.
Oh, I know.
It's a way. So, are you getting pretty excited? Getting ready here. We're a few Saturdays away from college football, and it's talking season. There's lots of love for Nebraska in the West. There's so much build up. I mean, it seems weekly news and hype for the Nebraska Colorado game. Are you still in kind of chill mode, or are you getting that itch?
No, it's starting to build up here too. You know, I was just with Coach Tucker the other night, and I was with a bunch of the guys from the media at a golf outing yesterday, and that's all anybody could talk about. I mean, it's almost like this game has just taken over the season, and the Pac-12 is what we're going to play in the rest of the year, but we're just playing one big game, and you know, they've also got Air Force after they play Nebraska, and that is a hard team to get ready for, but nobody wants to talk about anything but Nebraska right now.
What's Coach Tucker like? And, I mean, his work speaks for itself defensively at Bama and at Georgia. But, you know, this is his first head coaching job, and I wanted to kind of get your take. And I thought from a context standpoint, the headline last week in the Denver Post was, you know, what has Nebraska done? That's all we talked about for a week. But contextually, it was, hey, both programs have struggled here for a few years. And he couldn't quite get why Colorado kids are going to Nebraska. What's the sense you get of Coach Tucker? I mean, Colorado's been through a lot of coaching changes, as has Nebraska.
Yeah, well, you know, it's when you come from the programs he's come from, and you walk in, you just have a higher set of standards, and you have a higher set of expectations around the program, for the program as the head coach. You have a higher set of your standard for your fan base. You have a higher standard for everybody that works with you. And so he's learning that he's not in Georgia anymore, but that isn't stopping him from trying to make it into Georgia.
Sure.
So, he's a tough dude. He's got a great sense of the business. He's got great pedigree, and you know, I think he's going to do just fine. It's going to show you. He's going to be a year behind Scott. You know, Scott's full year is going to show up probably in this game, but he's going to close the gap pretty fast, I think.
Gary Barnett's with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Coach, when you look at where Nebraska's at, lots of pats on the back, preseason, you still got to do it and earn it on the field, but Nebraska's a trendy choice for the West right now. And as you look at the West with Northwestern, as you look at Purdue, as you look at Minnesota, I mean, the ESPN FPI, those projections came out kind of a 2.0 version yesterday. Do you have a gut right now as we talk in July about who you kind of like in the West? I mean, it seems to me like there's going to be a lot of 8-4, 9-3s, and the West is better, but they may beat up on one another.
No, I agree, Chris. I think this thing's going to be up for grabs. You don't count Iowa out. Wisconsin's got a really good group of kids coming back. And, you know, maybe a quarterback like they haven't had since Russell Wilson. They've got, Minnesota's going to be better. And they've proven it at the end of the year. You know, you can't let Northwestern hang around, because they know how to win. Purdue is now a contender of sorts. So I think it's a total, crapshoot in the West right now. And that's good for the West, I think.
It is. Let's look at the East for a second. And Michigan's, this is the year they break through, a little bit more lenient offense with kind of a wide open look. Defensively, they've always been pretty good. How do you feel about Ohio State and Sparty? Sparty was, you know, up and down, but man, they were tough. They lost some close ball games. Ohio State, no Urban. I mean, does Ohio State take a step back? They still got a ton of talent.
Yeah, talent-wise, they don't take a step back. Who knows now how much different the coaching's going to be. But, yeah, I still think there's four programs there that you gotta really watch. Mm-hmm. Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan State, and Michigan. I think those four teams are, you know, anything can happen with them. With Michigan, Ohio State, you know, they are what they are, you know, and always have been, and that's not probably going to change too drastically. But I still think it's a 14 race in there, you know, before the season starts. Let's see how, what injuries do and that sort of stuff. But I still think there's, you know, the Big Ten is really up for grabs. I think this is really balanced year, maybe the most balanced I've seen in years.
Does balance mean dominant? I mean, people talk about the SEC West and the SEC overall. And is the Big Ten kind of closing that gap as far as not just one or two superstar teams, but just the depth of the league? Have you seen it get better because of coaching?
Well, I think that what happens when you got all that balance is that every game's hard. And if you can get through your side, then and you're healthy, then you got a chance to beat just about anybody. So I think that's what the balance does. It just prepares you for the league championship and for whatever comes with that, whether it's playoffs or bowl games. So I think it just prepares you much better for a tougher opponent that you might get in the playoffs or in a bowl game.
Couple more minutes. Gary Barnett with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Coach, what's your view when it comes to Colorado recruiting? What was your approach for in-state kids? Nebraska, when they head to Boulder, is going to have 10 Coloradoans on the Nebraska roster. They've done really well getting different types, be it a guy like Doman that's kind of a hybrid, a guy that's waiting in the wings like McCaffrey. Nebraska's done very well in Colorado. How did you stave that off? What was your approach with keeping in-state talent and coming to Boulder?
Well, Colorado's unique in that, you know, the entire population, a lot of the population is from somewhere else. And so their eyes go and their ears go listen to and watch other programs. And, you know, frankly, you know, it's a different deal for Coach Tucker now than it was for me. We were doing a little bit better, and so we could keep some of those kids. You know, when they haven't done well here, then, you know, all these kids that are coming out now have heard and seen in Colorado, since they can remember anything about football, is Colorado's been a losing program. So it's going to have to leave. My approach was Colorado was their home, and that's the first place we're going to recruit. And, you know, if we would go after the players we thought that could play at Colorado, and if we didn't get them, we didn't get them. But we went after them. And then we were going to go to Southern California, and then Texas. So after that, anything we found out there was just, a diamond in the rough or something we fell into. But we were going to recruit those three areas primarily.
You're right. It is a different deal. And Colorado won on big stages when you were there as an assistant and when you were there as a head coach. And when you have turnover at the head coaching spot, it just sets the program back, and Nebraska's experienced that when you keep kind of reshuffling the deck. What's the timeline to overcome that? Can it happen quickly, or are you starting 3-4 strides behind the eight ball, so to speak, because of the turnover, the constant turnover?
Well, I think that for Coach Tucker, it's going to be a 3-year deal. You know, and the second year is always the hardest. He's got some really good players on offense, but he's going to lose a lot of those players at the end of this year, and he's now got to go replace them, and they've got to play next year as freshmen. So that makes next year pretty tough. But he's going to have the kind of players he wants, and he's going to have the kind of team he wants in 3 years. Now he will coach his butt off, and he's going to be hard to beat. They're not going to give up. You know, they're going to be a physical team. They're going to run the football better than they have. So you're going to beat them still. But they're, you know, you're probably going to have more talent on the field than what he's going to have in most positions, with the exception in the offense. So, but you got to use it, and you got to beat them. And that's the way he's going to be. You're going to have to beat him
Coach, last thought. We'll get caught up again here as we get closer to the season. Back to Nebraska, Colorado. You mentioned on how that game is what everyone's talking about, and it feels kind of like a one-game season, but there's lots more to shoot for as well. Is there a Nebraska-Colorado game when you were at Boulder that just took over? I mean, the hype was unreal that you remember.
Well,
they were all important. Yeah, they were all big, but is there one that sticks out to you?
You know, I think probably the game in 94, and I wasn't here for that. The hype in this place was crazy about that one. And Colorado are a great football team. So I think there was a lot of hype there that Nebraska just beat them. But, I think there's hype anytime Colorado plays Nebraska. I don't think it's any bigger any time than, you know, this year will be as big as anything we had when we were winning the championship.
Gary Barnett with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Coach, keep hitting them far and straight. Keep winning those Skittles, all right? And we'll talk on down the road. Look forward to it. Thanks for a few minutes.
All right, Chris. Far and straight isn't in my vocabulary anymore, by the way.
Well,
talk to you later.
See you. Take care.
Bye-bye.
That's the coach, Gary Barnett, off the golf course. Good insight on Tucker. And he's going to try and bring Georgia to Boulder. Big, strong, and physical. But, I mean, coach has been around media. Coach has been around Coach Tucker. And this thing's continuing to grow and grow and grow. And why not? It's going to be a party, man, out in Boulder. It's going to be Colorado at Nebraska. Should I flip it around? Forgive me. Nebraska out at Colorado. But you get my point that it's just going to be monstrous. And it just keeps growing, that hype, that build for it. I want to tell you about your friends at West Blue Realty. How about Tom Luby? How about Kelly Hofschneider? Are you going to move? Are you looking to move? Are you thinking about moving? Well, West Blue Realty specializes in residential home sales around Lincoln and surrounding communities. That next move will be a smooth one with West Blue Realty. And when you mention Hail Varsity, West Blue will give you up to $1,000 off your closing of your next home purchase. Tom Luby, call him today at 402-540-3768. Kelly Hofschneider, 402-202-2312. Log on today, westbluerealty.com.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Doc Wednesday. Dr. Brandon Seifert, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. Dr. Brandon, how are you?
I'm great, Chris. How are you guys doing?
Doing well, man. All-star game last night, and MLB will get cranked back up. And let's spend some time on Phillies right-hander Jake Arrieta. He's going to keep pitching as the team evaluates his long-term health due to bone spurs in that throwing elbow. Does that sound like a great idea? Man, I hear bone spurs and elbow, and I cringe if I'm a pitcher.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, great question. You know, this is one of those things that is kind of debatable in terms of can you play with this during the season? Do you need to go and get it taken care of right away? This is definitely one of those that you could definitely play through as long as it's more of just kind of a bone spur type issue, some wear and tear on the backside of the elbow. You know, the big thing with these always is that we're asked ourselves is, okay, how did you end up getting the bone spurs in the first place? You know, what else mechanically or biomechanically is going on that would have led to you developing these bone spurs? And that obviously can be from a variety of things. You know, something we've talked about previously on the show, we talked about the Tommy John injuries where you loosen up that ligament on the inside of the elbow. What happens there is, you know, most of those patients will tend to not necessarily just have the pain on the inside of the elbow due to Tommy John, but it's really it's the other stuff that kind of comes along with that that tends to sneak up on some of these athletes. So, for example, as you start to loosen up the inside of the elbow, that force gets transferred to the outside of the elbow, and it starts to wrap around to the backside. then you start to have this kind of overload syndrome occur that starts to kind of load extra areas in the back of the elbow joint. And then what happens is your body tries to heal those areas, and in the process of trying to heal those areas, extra bone growth can occur, and that's kind of where the spurs come from. And that tends to be actually where the majority of athletes that have some kind of Tommy John issues going on, with just a little bit of looseness. So maybe they don't necessarily have a bad enough ligament injury to need that reconstructed, but they're also kind of overloading other areas that can lead to this bone spur development or some cartilage wear on the outside of the elbow, which then would require, you know, some other type of procedure, whether it's a elbow scope to clean things up, open procedure to take the spurs out, those kinds of things. And so that would be kind of my question for, you know, for Arrieta's case, is he experiencing some kind of ligamentous dysfunction that's leading to this, or is this just an issue of all the wear and tear going through his elbow? It's not necessarily that it's loose, but that he's just kind of starting to wear out some of the cartilage, and he's starting to form bone spurs because of that.
Well, and Philly's take is 85% of Jake is better than what our alternative is. Dr. Brandon Seifert with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center at Jock Doc Wednesday. Jake Arrieta and bone spurs on that elbow, his throwing elbow, our topic. So if you're to go in and clean up bone spurs, touch on that process surgically and how you go in and fix.
Yeah, you know, so a couple of options, depending on obviously the location of where those spurs are in that elbow, they tend to set themselves up more kind of the very back side of the elbow. So if you feel, at least anatomically in the elbow, if you feel on the back of your elbow, the kind of pointy part of your elbow, if you will, that's called the olecranon. And if you find kind of the central tip of that and kind of move up towards the shoulder from there, just maybe about half inch to an inch above that tends to be where those bone spurs form in the back of your elbow. And so with that, if you can get to it with an elbow scope, a couple little poke holes, and get that scope coming right in that spot, you could technically go in and kind of shave them via that modality. Sometimes they form in places that are hard to get to with the scope. Then you have to make a tiny incision, go into that area, and actually open up the elbow joint to take the spurs out. Most of the time, you can get away with taking care of this with the scope. Some of our athletes that have, you know, Tommy John type injuries, and you're in there doing the Tommy John procedure, you know, fixing the ligament, that's an open procedure. Sometimes you can see the spurs while you're there, and you'll clean up some of those spurs while you're doing that. And so that's kind of what those two processes look like. Again, just to straight up, you know, clean up the bone spur issue is typically a scope, and that's probably what he's looking at if his ligament looks okay.
Dr. Brandon Seifert's with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center at Jock Doc Wednesday. Jake Arrieta, our feature today with bone spurs in that elbow. He wants to make a start, Arrieta does, on Friday to kind of determine the next step, if he shuts it down and has that cleanup, or if he can keep on going John Wayne on the mound. A thought, though, with Arrieta here, he's complained about lack of feel for his pitches. And can you comment on that a little bit? Just, and I can imagine it, where you're trying to throw off speed, you're trying to throw breaking, whatever his repertoire is, if he doesn't have a good feel for it, is that a direct relation? Is that directly related to that that bone spur issue, that elbow issue he has, having lack of able to get a good grip or a good feel?
Yeah, it absolutely can be. And really the feel there is, you know, with those spurs, you start impinging upon kind of other tissues in the area, that starts to create a little different kind of motion or different mechanics kind of in the elbow, and that can obviously change how well you're kind of feeling out your pitches. You know, those folks at that level are so tuned in that, you know, every kind of fine movement in their elbow and their shoulder when they're throwing their pitches, and so that can kind of throw it off. You know, if there is, you know, some other kind of structural abnormality, if there's some, you know, kind of looseness in that ligament, that also kind of change kind of that feel. It also might be when you're kind of snapping towards the very end of that throw, it could be that with those bone spurs kind of riding up on the back of the elbow, it might give a little bit of a different feel in terms of extension. It might block some of that extension where your elbow goes fully straight, and that also can give you kind of a different feel. That kind of final send off, if you will, on your pitch, when you kind of snap off that final motion, that is a huge part of, you know, kind of locating your pitches and the feel of your pitches. And so no doubt that's probably starting to be impacted, probably most likely from the spur part of this.
Dr. Brandon, a thought too with bone spurs recurring for Arrieta. He had season-ending surgery for bone spurs back in August of 2011 when he was with Baltimore. Is it common for bone spurs to come back?
Yeah, it sure is. You know, and again, it kind of goes back to that kind of twofold reason. You know, one is this somebody who's had kind of some wear and tear arthritis issues in their elbow, and they're getting those bone spurs from that, you know, process or pathology. If that's the case, then yes, you're going to have some return of those because you can't really solve the you know, cartilage issue per se. On the flip side, if this is somebody who is developing bone spurs because that, you know, ligament is loose, or there's some instability there, you know, if you undergo if it's loose enough, you do a Tommy John procedure, then that in and of itself, so it should work pretty well and stabilize that elbow and hopefully likely lead to less bone spur formation. But in his case, you know, if he does have some looseness in that ligament and he's not undergone a procedure for it, then yeah, those are going to start to form again. If it is, you know, related to some of that laxity or looseness in that elbow, it's going to be kind of a recurring issue for them. And it is something that we do tend to see pretty often at that high level of, you know, undergoing a procedure. Then if you have several years left in your career, yeah, more likely than not, you're going to undergo another procedure to clean up those spurs, whether it's during your playing days or you wait till you retire to do something like that as well.
Dr. Brandon Seifer with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center at Jock Doc Wednesday. Jake Arrieta with the Phils. Elbow issues. He's 8-7 on the season. Doesn't have a good grasp of his pitches, he says, and going to make another start Friday to move forward whether or not he gets those bone spurs cleared up and cleaned up. Dr. Brandon, thanks for jumping on with us today. Great insight on those elbow issues that pitchers face. We'll touch base again next week and have a great rest of your time.
Hey, that's great, Chris. You guys take care.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
One final time on a Wednesday, loaded today. Enjoyed it. Many thanks to Gary Barnett. Many thanks to Brad Edwards. Many thanks to Mitch Sherman and Mike Shewhart. Love you, Shuey. So it was fun to talk. A lot of college football and kind of that best case scenario for Nebraska. And Will Bauer's going to have some of the highlights up on SoundCloud for you on the ESPN and Hale Varsity Twitter handle. Full interviews, just go to ESPNLincoln.com. for the in-demand, and can hear those whenever you want on your time. Podcast will be up on HaleVarsity.com and iTunes. You want to catch the full show, about an hour 25 or so of, well, glory. Kidding. Great stuff from the coaches and insiders. We love checking in with tomorrow. How about Brandon Vogel? How about Bill Dolman? How about our favorite Buffalo Bill, Jeremiah Searles? So we're getting there. We'll hit some NBA Friday to kind of round the week out. We are in Chicago next Thursday and Friday for Media Days. Loving that. Can't wait to hunker down and report and interview throughout the days, the Thursday, Friday. So good stuff. Good stuff ahead. Couple of thoughts as we say goodbye on Nebraska. And we spent a lot of time with, you know, the best case scenario here comes down to injuries and comes down to how do you perform in close games. And you've got Nebraska last year that just had a tough time in one score games. Do you learn from that? Do you get better from that? I think with this staff, yes is the answer. That'd mean you win all of them. But you'll be flip around last year where you were 2-6 in one score games. You flip 6-2 around. I mean, that'd be great if you're a Nebraska fan. How do you do better in close ball games? Well, it comes down to third and shorts, comes down to turnovers, taking care of the football, comes down to running the football. I went soapbox on running and stopping the run. So that's something to chew on, and we talked about it to start off the show with Nebraska and some of those close games in the best case scenario. And I think you'd take a 10-3 top 10, I mean, the last time Nebraska finished in the top 10, do you know? I do. It's 2001. They finished eighth. They went 11-2. They were number one in the country for most of the year. They beat Oklahoma. Black Friday happened. You got to play the second best team in college football history, the 0-1 Hurricanes in the Rose Bowl. It's the last time Nebraska's been finished in the top 10. They've been ranked in the top 10 recently, but they haven't finished there. Second best ranking's been 14th, 2009, after you should have beat Texas and you crushed Arizona with Foley and Gronk on that team, by the way. I don't know that Gronk played. I think Foley might have. Am I saying the guy's name right, Foley?
Nick Foles?
Yeah, Foles. I'm thinking of Axel Foley.
I knew who you were talking about. If it makes you feel any better.
Foles, Foley. That's marvelous credibility. The guy that just wins Super Bowls. Tomorrow at 4. Will Bauer, thank you very much. Thanks to Coach Barnett, Brad Edwards, Mitch Sherman, Mike Shewhart. Talk to you tomorrow with Hail Varsity. See ya.